Tanya, I have great news.
Yes?
With all of your wedding activities on the horizon, I thought you'd be excited to find out the sale you wait for is finally here. Macy's Friends and Family Sale.
Yes! What perfect timing.
You can get an extra 30% off brands that almost never go on sale, like Levi's, Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, Nike, Gap, Hotel Collection, Lego, and more.
This is incredible. I need to plan for my bachelorette party, bridal shower, rehearsal dinner. I mean, so now I know exactly where to look.
Exactly. And you can get 15% off beauty, makeup, and more, plus free shipping when you spend $25.
Amazing. Macy's Friends and Family Sale is April 25th through May 5th. Shop at Macy's.com and in-store.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card?
With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime.
So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve.
Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing that you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Scrubbing In with Becca Tilley and Tanya Rapp, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, everybody. We are scrubbing in and we are so excited because we did tease this Monday, but today we are joined by an award-winning producer, New York Times best-selling author and motivational speaker.
He has made a commitment to inspire people around the world through entertainment, and he has definitely been an inspiration for me for many, many years. I love this man.
He is a force in media and has become a leading authority on inspiration, spiritual wellness, and personal development.
Please help us give a warm welcome to...
Wait, let's say please give a warm welcome back.
Oh, good.
Sorry, Mart.
Please help us give a warm welcome back to Devon Franklin!
Tanya is high energy as soon as Devon. I don't think he even knows what to do with her right now.
It's my sister right here.
Yeah.
Love her dearly.
I really like, you have done so much for me personally, and it's so crazy because like we're not like best friends by any means. You know, like I see you very rarely, but your impact on my life has been so great. And so when, I know you've been on the podcast before, but having you in studio is just like a whole different feel because I just feel like I gained so much from you just by like listening to you and watching you. And so to have you here is very exciting for me.
I'm excited. I'm always excited to see you and just grateful for our connection.
Yeah. Absolutely. Me too.
We talked to you last in 2021.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like a lot has changed in your life. You're in a different place altogether, as we all are. That was during kind of like pandemic and a lot has happened since then. What's new? What's happening in your life right now?
You know, I mean, it's just been so busy with work, you know, producing, this new movie and started acting. Which is brand new. I never even thought about acting ever. It was never a, I mean, I used to act in like middle school plays and high school plays, but I never thought like, oh yeah, I want to act in a movie or a TV series. And to now be doing that is, I mean, that's probably the newest thing, which, you know, even now I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And it's just been a season of just, you know, navigating a lot of busyness and, you know, working on trying to, you know, just not be overwhelmed, right? Like, you know, everybody wants success, which is great. But at the same time, you know, success requires management. It's not like, oh, it's so easy. Like, no, most of the time, if you are successful on some level, you're working even harder.
Oh, yeah.
And so for me, it's just really been trying to, you know, stay in the moment, be present, enjoy, and not just be so overwhelmed by all the things that are happening.
What was it? Where were you or what happened when you had a moment where you were like, I want to act now?
I didn't.
Oh,
I didn't. I was offered the role.
Oh,
Yeah, the producers of and the director of this movie called Jesus Revolution. They came out earlier this year and was very
massive,
successful.
Massive, by the way.
Yeah, it was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the highest grossing inspirational film this year so far. And so they came to me and they said, hey, there's a part that we want you to play of this reporter who works for Time Magazine. And at first I was going to say, well, I'm not an actor. Mm-hmm. That was my first instinct. But then I was like, well, let me read the script. So I read the script and I said, oh, I kind of like this part. It's a great story. The script's great. So I said, okay. And started working with an acting coach and really took it very seriously and went to set and did what I was instructed to do. And it went well. And I was like, oh, this is good. And people started seeing the movie saying, oh, wow, you were great.
Yeah.
Like, nobody even thought like, oh, I would have never known you never acted before. So it was just an opportunity presented to me, as have all the other acting opportunities mm-hmm. I've had since then. And I have a couple projects that'll come out into this year. So,
but it is interesting because I think a lot of time in life, people will get offered things and you think, oh, no, like, that's not me. Like, yeah. That's not my box. Like, this right. is my box and that's not my box. And right. I think a lot of people don't have the courage to step out of that mm-hmm. and face something that mm-hmm. is new or scary.
Right.
What got you through that? Because I feel like you do that a lot in your career. Like, you are... Yeah. If I ask you what you are mm-hmm. an author, mm-hmm. you are a motivational mm-hmm. speaker, you are a CEO, you have a production company, you're a producer, you're yeah. an actor. I mean, like there's more that I'm forgetting sure. too.
Yeah. You know, I think it requires a level of just ignorance, you know, like I'm not really aware of what I can't do. So let me stay ignorant to that. Right. Uh-huh. Like, and then also it's like, why would I create a label for myself that would limit myself? So if I'm like, oh, I'm just a producer, then that's cool. Like, I mm-hmm. do know how to produce. I'm a really good producer. But if I only wear that label, then that label can block other things that I am. I just don't know that I am. Mm-hmm. So I just try to live in the world of possibility. Like, oh, well, why not? You know, and the worst thing that happens is I do this movie and I fail.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Well, I didn't quit my day job. You know.
Yeah.
But I had the experience of doing it. And in that experience is growth. So no matter what, there's no way I could lose. So just living that way of like, you know, I don't want to be defined by anything I do. I want to, you know, continue to explore who I am, what's possible, you know, and that's the fun. I mean, mm-hmm. to learn that I have this other skill set that I didn't know I had and to now have opportunities to express it and explore it. That's what keeps me doing it. It's like, oh, before I became an author, I didn't know I could write. Mm-hmm. The opportunity was presented. You know, I said, oh, I wrote one book. And then, oh, I have an idea for this book. And mm-hmm. now we're like 6 or 7 books in.
That's like a whole other thing to be really proud of. Because is truly just. But I think that fear of failure is what really stops people. And I feel like, but have you experienced failure in any way? Because I feel like everything you touch is.
I mean, you know, look, I think we have to then evaluate what is our definition of failure. Mm-hmm. Right? Because failure traditionally indicates that the result that I wanted, I didn't get. So then the emotions around that usually reveal a level of attachment to a result that probably was unhealthy. Ooh. Right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm feeling like I failed, okay, well, how did you fail? Well, you had a goal, you didn't hit it. Well, what did you learn? Oh, well, here's what I learned. How did you grow? Well, here's how I grew. Did you fail? So when I think of failure, you know, I look at it through the lens of, you know, have I had things that didn't go the way I wanted? Sure. But I'm glad that that happened. You know, not every movie I've worked on has been, you know, super successful. Not every book that I've written, you mm-hmm. know, has been a New York Times bestseller at all. But then I have to say, okay, if I'm creating a false definition of success as well as a false definition of failure, then I'm always going to be subject to those definitions.
Yeah.
Instead of allowing the result is what the result is. Like learning to be, passionate enough to be able to write it or produce it mm-hmm. or act in it, but detached from the result. Like, you know, whatever that does.
How do you do that though? I think that's been.
What's your quote that you always say?
I know. It's open to the possibility, not attached to the outcome.
Yes.
And I think that can make you live a very healthy, happy life.
Yes.
But I don't know how to do that. I am attached to every single outcome. And actually, it's funny you bring up the New York Times bestseller because when we put out the book, I was so attached to that outcome. And when it didn't happen, I felt like the book was a failure. And it was it like broke my heart because I spent so much time and effort and energy in it. And it, to me, it felt like a failure. And that was really hard for me to deal with. Like I couldn't wrap my head around it. So how do you stay attached to the outcome?
Yes. And I've been there before, right? So anything I'm talking about is because I've been there. So I've been there when, in terms of, you know, the books and, you know, wanting the sales and wanting the list and it not happening multiple times. And to your point, feeling like, oh, I failed. And what has helped me get out of that is there's probably not one place I go where someone doesn't come up to me and say, I have one of your books. Mm-hmm. And it helped me. And thank you for what you're doing. And, you know, I mean, and so then I say, okay, the New York Times list is an arbitrary list. It's cool. Great. If we hit it, cool. I'm not knocking it. But like you could hit the New York Times bestsellers list for a variety of reasons and not touch anybody.
Right.
So is this about lives? Is this about changing lives with the message that we've been given? Or is it about an arbitrary, you know, artificial system that's supposed to make us feel more accomplished than we are?
Yeah.
Right. A New York Times bestseller does not make the words any different.
Right.
It's the same words. It's the same book. Mm-hmm. It's the same process.
Yeah.
So again, like if it happens, cool, wonderful. But at the end of the day, it's about the shift of perspective.
Yeah.
It's about the people, right? Like I wrote this book to change people's hearts and minds, to put something positive in the world. And I got to work on being, you know, detached and agnostic about how that happens. Because the more attached I am, then what happens is what you've experienced, what I've experienced, negative emotion, right? I did not hit the New York Times bestsellers list. I am a failure on some level, or I'm not as successful as I thought. Where, who is the arbiter of that?
Yeah.
Who determines that? We do. So we create this false narrative in our own life. We judge ourselves by it. And then what's a perfectly amazing book becomes a book that's not so good.
Yeah.
It's all here. Totally. It's all in our mind. It has nothing to do with reality. Anybody that picks up the book is going to get so much out of it. I know I got a lot out of it. You know, there's so much in the book that I think is life-changing and perspective-changing and shifting. So it's really about saying, okay, what are the things here that I can focus on that will keep me in a positive emotion, in a positive mental state, and let me work on releasing anything that will not?
Yeah.
Right? So, and I'm not even saying the next book, sure, work towards the list. No problem. But do it from a place of joy.
Right.
Do it from a place that this is exciting, you know, and great. And what I learned is, oh, these are the things that have to be done. And truth be told, most of the time hitting the list beyond the type of press that is done for a book, a lot of it has to just do with the number of people that you're reaching. So if you're reaching a number of people, you know, in advance or timed right around release, you know, it gives you a better chance to that be, to be acknowledged. So it's like, okay, let me focus on the people. How can I get to people? How can I sell this message to people? And then let's see what's meant to be. And just like a seed, every seed's different. Yeah. Some books are not meant to do that, and other books will. So it's hard. I get it. I totally get it. And you're absolutely right. It's the work that I'm doing so that I don't take myself to a negative place that I don't have to.
I will say though, that experience, I remember I faced one of my, like I was fearing rejection, asking you to endorse the book. Like I was like, I didn't want to ask you because they were talking about who do you want to endorse it? And they were saying, is there somebody in the book space that you really admire? And like, you were the first name that came to mind, but I was like, we're not really like close friends. So I'm scared. I don't want to ask him like, and just was scared you were going to say no, or like ignore the message or whatever. And then when you said yes, I was like, wow, like why do I not do things that make me like a little bit nervous? You know, like I always do, I stay very in my comfort zone. I never step out of it. And that was something that like I stepped out of it for. And it really like paid off in such a beautiful way. Like it made me feel so good and supported and like, I don't know. So that was like a big moment for me that you were part of. Yeah. And I know.
I was honored. I was like, great, of course. Why not? Thanks for thinking of me.
Yeah,
it was no problem. And the book was great. And, you know, I was happy to support it in any way I could.
And you're working on another book, too.
I'm working on another book.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, the book is called One of One. And it's basically the true meaning behind being single. And it's ironic. Like, I didn't know what it meant to be single. Until I became single again after divorce.
Cool. Crazy.
And then what I realized is that we're all single, no matter of your relationship status, because we're all individuals. Mm-hmm. And a couple is only as strong as the two singles that make up the couple. And so often we don't actually focus on who we are as an individual and harness the power of that, because we spend so much time looking for a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then we get into a couple, but because we don't know how to be a good single, we don't know how to be one with ourselves. How can we be one with someone else? And then we overburden the relationship.
You're definitely preaching to the choir over here.
When's this book coming out?
Yeah, when is this coming out?
I'm working on it now. It'll be out, I'm hoping, like in the first quarter of next year. That's my
2024.
Yeah. Tanya and I are both like,
yeah, yeah.
Tell but us that's more.
So Devon, tell us more. What have you learned in this new era, please?
Oh, man. No, I've learned so much.
No, because, I mean, you were married for,
I was married for
almost
10 years.
A decade. Yeah, and yeah. So I feel like that, you know, we were talking about how when you do become dependent on another person in a weird mm-hmm. way, it just naturally happens when sure. you're with somebody mm-hmm. for several years.
Yes.
And, but you can't lose yourself in that. And sometimes yes. it's easier and sometimes it's harder. And mm-hmm. I feel like, is that what you learned after mm-hmm. your divorce?
Well, in part, you know, in part it's like, okay, you know, if I focus on it being an individual, right? Well, what does it mean for me to be an individual? You know, am I loving to myself? Do I care for myself? Do I keep space for myself? Do I give grace to myself? So what, in my experience, what happens is a lot of times we're waiting to be with someone to do those things.
Oh my gosh. It's like he's always speaking to me. keep going.
So what happens is that when we don't become the number one generator of grace and space and love and happiness and joy for ourselves, we then overburden the relationship to do something it's not designed to do. Because somebody, even if they can't articulate it, if you carry an energy in your relationship that you need this person to be your source of happiness, you need this person to be your source of joy, you need this person to be your source of recreation and entertainment, they are going to reject you subconsciously, because all of us know that's not how we're set up. I'm not set up to be somebody else's source.
Yeah.
I'm not set up to be your, no. I can make a contribution to your happiness, but I don't expect me to make you happy every day, because I guarantee you there are going to be many days I'll make you sad. So this idea of being one of one, you all are hilarious.
I think we're in a season of life that you're really speaking to right
now.
Oh,
that's cool. Yeah. Well, for me, it's like, okay, knowing that I'm one of one, oh, great. Okay. That means I'm rare. It means I'm valuable. It means that I'm not defined by who I'm with. I'm defined by the fact that I was born, that I'm in this earth, and I'm a unique individual. And that's important, because in a relationship, there's a tendency to give up that individuality.
Yeah.
And I believe that this is why so many relationships don't work. And this is why people are so unhappy is because they are not themselves. This is the irony. You get with somebody, whether it's in a relationship or a marriage, and they become the person you're less truthful with. You tell the people outside the relationship all the stuff that you wish you could tell your partner. That's like crazy. And then we wonder why relationships don't work, because we are not being ourselves and we're not harnessing the power of what it means to be one of one, to be an individual, to have an individual way of thinking. And then I bring that to the relationship. A great relationship will enhance individuality. It won't cause individuality to be diminished. And that's something that I did not know before getting, you know, married. Mm-hmm. Like before I was married, I thought like, oh, similar to what everybody thinks. Oh, you know, you find love and then that's when life happens. And I did find love and life was great. But when I bought into the myth that the relationship or the marriage was going to make me happier
yeah.
than when I was uncoupled, that myth was very destructive, because it wasn't true. And this is the bill of goods we sell everybody. Get into a relationship. Find love, find marriage. It's the answer.
Yeah, it's the fairy tale.
It's the fairy tale. And we had people squandering the period of time when they're uncoupled, looking for somebody, when really you should be looking for yourself. Who am I? What mm-hmm. do I want? What are my experiences? What do I like? What don't I like? So then when I'm in a relationship, what happens is if I have a stronger sense of self, right? Because every relationship can teach us more about ourselves. But let's say I have a strong sense of self, and I have grace for myself and I have space for myself. I'm going to have space for my partner. I'm going to have grace for my partner. If I have a short temper with me, I'm going to have a short temper with them. If I don't really like me, I'm going to have a problem with them. I'm going to find fault with them, right? Anything that I'm pointing the finger at usually is a mirror for something I'm not feeling inside.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of being one of one, it's like, okay, even if I'm in a relationship, I'm a single.
Mm-hmm.
What makes me a good single? What do I need to do in my life to be the best single I can be? And then how do I share that with someone instead of demanding? Because here's what happens. We demand that people perform.
Oh my gosh, wow.
In a relationship. You better do this,
mm-hmm.
right? Or, well, why does doing that matter so much? I'm not saying that you should negotiate in a relationship. What makes you all one? What makes the relationship work? Talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But so often, because we're not doing the work on the inside, we're not figuring out what's going on in us, we point to the person as the problem. And the danger there is you point to the person as a problem, you break up with that person, but the real problem never gets solved.
Yeah.
And the real problem was us. So then we take the same problem to the next relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We keep pointing the finger. This ain't right. You get out. Take the next problem to the same. You see how crazy it is?
And
then we have all this heartbreak that we didn't need to have.
Right.
Because it starts with like, okay, well, why is this issue a problem to begin with? Why am I attracting an unhealthy person to be continuously? Because there's something in me that's unhealthy that's not being addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the, you know, again, I don't mean to go on a tangent here, but
no,
this is
so
what
good,
the new
though.
Book is going to be about. One of one, you know, really knowing what it means to be single and finding the purpose and the power and the peace of it.
Has there been struggle in that for you? I mean, being with someone for 10 years, I mean, that's such a...
Yes.
I know, like, you know, but your perspective now, like you have this really amazing perspective on it, but it's like, were you
How
ever...
How long did it take to get to that point?
Man, listen, let me tell you, pain is the greatest teacher.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? So pain is the greatest teacher. So I couldn't even begin to articulate or wrap my head around these concepts without going through deep pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not being married and you know, I mean, I wouldn't say losing my wife, but... You know, having a life transition and going through divorce is the most painful experience in life. And I certainly would never prescribe it to anyone at all. And so for me, instead of coming out of the divorce and the relationship and pointing the finger, I wanted to say, okay, well, what was my part in this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I need to know more about me?
Mm-hmm.
Not from a judgmental standpoint, just from a like life. Like, hey, who am I? What did I learn? How did I get here? And so from that work and, you know, working with a therapist and working with life coaches and journaling and writing and reading the scripture and all of that, that's what started me to get clearer on, you know, where I went wrong and how I could help others and use the pain that I've been through in a positive way to help others, you know, navigate relationships as I do too, you know, and it's not easy, right? Like, but I feel like it's... For me, the idea that I could use something difficult that I've been through to help somebody else, it then gives it more purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was the pain of going through this and then doing it publicly. You know, that's a people everybody wants a spotlight, but the spotlight that illuminates also burns.
Mm-hmm.
And
ooh, that's good. That's so good.
You know,
that is a quote.
Yeah.
It's the truth. And so, you know, I can't choose to go through it privately. Everybody in the world knows. So that pain of that is what has produced a lot of these thoughts and this clarity around. And also for me personally, it's like, you know, whenever I do get married again, you know, I can do it from, I think, a stronger emotional place.
Mm-hmm.
With a greater perspective
on
what the marriage needs or the relationship needs and what it doesn't, and do my best to not overburden it with things that it was never designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one can heal us. We can only heal ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And that's such like a beautiful place to be into. I always find it so, I don't know what the word is, but so off-putting when people go through a divorce and they are like, that person sucked and they sucked and I hate this person. It's like, you were married to this person for so long. And also like take accountability for, you know, it's a relationship is two people. It's two people that cannot make a relationship work. It's not one person's fault. And so I think when you hear people come out of like a divorce and they're pointing the finger and bashing the other person, I find it to be so, like you said, like it's like, that's not you taking any accountability for it. It's such like it's nice to hear you say that from your perspective. My boyfriend was the same way. He was divorced and he had that same perspective of when he went through it. Obviously, everything's different and the circumstances were, I'm sure, different.
Sure.
But it was like, what did I attribute? What did I learn from this? And how can I grow moving forward in my next relationship? And when I do get married, to not allow that to happen again.
Yes. Yes. You know? Yes. And I, you know, I mean, I hope that we take that, you know, I hope that we take the time to do some introspection and do some thinking of like, okay, well, what can I do to do better?
Yeah.
You know, what can I learn from this? Because the pointing the finger, it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Placing blame is, it's low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
But to look inwardly, that requires courage. And, but that's where the answers always are.
Yeah.
Wow. I wanted to talk to you about.
I'm so excited about this book.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say, everybody listening, if you have not read any of Devon's books, they are all so fantastic. And I always learn something and grow from every single one of them. So I'm really excited for the new one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the weight because I knew that was a big.
That one was huge for me.
Yes.
Life changing.
Yeah.
Your views on celibacy. That was you with your ex, correct?
Yes, correct.
And how long were y'all dating where you chose celibacy?
We dated for almost a year.
Okay. Yeah. And that was the choice that y'all made to wait. Mm-hmm. Do you still have the same views on celibacy?
You know, I believe that that book in celibacy is absolutely a valuable tool,
mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. What I learned from, and also when you go back and look at the book, the idea behind delayed gratification, it's like, man. If we can get that, I think life would be so much better. Here's what I've learned. The error of my ways in that regard was bringing the public into my sex life. So going forward, I said, you know, y'all got my sex life. Hey, you read about it. This new chapter, Devon, I ain't talking about it. Because the same way, you can't invite the public in when you want them and keep them out when you don't.
Yeah.
So.
Becca went through the same thing.
Right? I went on The Bachelor and I was a virgin at the time. Mm.
And that was like her big thing. It was like Becca the virgin.
But I didn't, my plan wasn't to talk about being a virgin, but I said it in like, without remembering that I had a mic and seven cameras on me. You know, like I said it in a very like trying to comfort a friend. Like she was a virgin. I was like, oh, me too. And then I was like, oh my gosh, my whole storyline on the show has changed, right?
Wow.
And so I had this, you know, it's kind of this thing where I was like, okay, this is something I'm very proud of. I'm not gonna, you know, I don't want anyone who's watching who's also a virgin or choosing to wait to feel shame. But it wasn't my plan to have that part of my life so public. And so then it was like people felt comfortable coming up to me and being like, to my face, like, are you still a virgin? And so
it's
there
like,
was,
excuse me?
And so then when,
like, who are you to ask me that? How is that any of your business?
But it was the same thing. It's like it gave people this idea that they had the right to know this information about me.
Yeah.
So when I lost my virginity, I felt this enormous weight of like, I've let everyone down. You know, it was this like weird thing that
it,
I
no,
felt
it was
like
so sad because it was that was her first reaction after. She was like, I remember you called me and you were like, everyone's going to be so let down. And I was like, why are you thinking about that right now? That is a big life moment for you. And like, all she could think about.
It was the same thing. So I was curious if that makes perfect sense that you're like, wow, I let everyone in. And then I wanted to be like, you don't deserve that. Like, you don't deserve to know that about me.
And it was, you know, it was well-meaning. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and again, the book is great. I love the book, you know, and love everything that we put into that book and, you know, think that message is powerful and that the message works. But in terms of like, you know, how I navigate, you know, these areas, it's like, yo, I got to learn the lesson that I got to keep it to me.
Yeah.
You know,
but I will tell you, just as somebody that read the book and was in a season of life where I was in this perpetual pattern of pain because I was giving my body before I was getting the relationship or the attachment that I wanted, the book really was good for me as somebody to learn these tools and realize like, obviously what I'm doing is hurting me. So I need to do something different. And when I pivoted that, my dating life completely shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I put that as kind of like a no, like I'm not doing this until I'm in a committed, serious relationship. And it really changed the dating game for me in such a big way. Like I wasn't crying all the time. Like I was, I'd be bummed if things didn't work out, but I wasn't in this like perpetual pattern of pain. So I think the book is really amazing for, you know, people going through different seasons of life and can relate it in different ways.
I agree. And it's interesting because even as you articulate it, you know, that what you just said goes directly to one of one.
Mm-hmm.
So when I know my value and I know my worth, then I make different decisions.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is like, look, sex was ultimately at some point getting in the way of my decision-making process.
Right.
And I had to say, I'm going to wait for sex until I feel the value that I need to feel from the person that I'm going to ultimately share that with.
Yeah.
And until I feel that value, I'm waiting.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it. That's what it means to be one of one. It means to know your value, know your worth, and make decisions based on that.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm so looking forward to
book release.
You know what else I'm looking forward to?
Yeah, I was just about
yes.
To. Should we take a break?
Oh, let's take a break. Okay. I'll come right back.
All right, we are back. Did you want to take the lead?
I wanted to take the lead because I know that this movie that is coming out very shortly, this has been in the works for 7 years, Flamin' mm-hmm. Hot. And I want to know, so you produced it.
Yes, I did. Yes, yes.
How, because I watched the trailer. I haven't seen the movie yet.
Uh-huh.
It's not out yet.
Right.
Why was this something that you really wanted to make? And talk about why movies like take so long. Like, how did it take 7 years to make this movie?
Yeah, you know, this is a movie that from the moment that I heard the story, I was like, I've got to make this movie. I had a mutual friend introduce me to Richard Montañez, and the Flamin' Hot movie is based upon Richard's story. And he came in and with his wife, Judy, and I said, just tell me your story. And so we sat there in my production office and, you know, met for about an hour or so, and he walked me through his story. And by the end of that meeting, I just said, I got to do it. I said, I'll make your story into a movie if you would give me the opportunity. And he said, yes. And I didn't have a studio at that point in time. I didn't know. I didn't have a writer. I didn't even know that, you know, if it was going to happen, but I just felt compelled. I said, wow, this story is too unique. It's too inspiring. It's too motivational for me to say no. So I gave him a yes in that meeting and, you know, began the process of getting the movie made. And movies, you know, it's not like music. You know, you can go into the studio and in 10 minutes have a song.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with movies, you know, it's labor intensive to tell these stories and from a motion picture standpoint and all that goes into production and casting and locations and mm-hmm. script development. I mean, there's just a lot more factors to create a high quality movie and a lot more people that have to be involved. So that's part of the reason why it takes so long. And so in the case of Flamin' Hot, I found a writer, we developed the pitch, we sold the pitch, and then we worked on it for probably 2 years, that script. And then we were able to go out to directors, and that's where I met Eva Longoria, and she came in to pitch herself as the director. And I liked what she had to say and thought that she was the director, and then hired her to direct. We hired a new writer to do the rewrite, and then that took another 2 years and some change. And then while that was all happening, COVID hit.
Oh my God.
Right. You know, right.
So all of these
slowed
things,
everything down.
Right. Oh my goodness. All these things were really, really challenging. And going back, like once I met Richard, meeting Richard, getting a writer on board and developing the pitch took time too. You know, we had to spend some hours figuring out like, you know, I mean, not even hours, months figuring out what's the movie story here. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I know your life story, but how do I create a movie mm-hmm. out of that? So all of these factors contribute to why it takes so long for a movie to get made. But I'm grateful that, you know, I gave Richard my word and I was successful in getting his movie made. And now it's about to come to the world and it's on Disney Plus and Hulu. And, you know, it's amazing that this is the first movie in the history of Disney that that's going out on both streaming platforms.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that merger just happened, right?
Yes. Yep, yeah. Yep. It just happened a little while ago. So it's amazing. You know, they saw the movie and thought that this was a perfect film for both platforms.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. I think it's such a testament to be able to keep your word on something.
Yes.
I mean, that's a long time in this industry to hold something and be able to produce, like have something to be like, I told you.
I know.
7 years ago.
I know. I mean, you know, but I take that seriously.
Yeah.
I really take it seriously. For me, it's a movie, but for them, it's their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I take it seriously and I really wanted to get this done because I think the story, I mean, he started as a janitor.
That's what's
working
so
at Frito-Lay,
crazy.
And, you know, cleaning the plant in Rancho Cucamonga. And the plant was losing jobs and he wanted to save jobs. And he just felt like the company was not appealing to his community. Because he is the son of a Mexican immigrant. And he's like, you know, the company's not appealing to the Mexican-American community because there's no spicy product. And he was like, look, you know, I want to take this spicy product and market it to my community because I think it's going to work. And they gave him the opportunity to do that. And what we now know as the success of Flamin' Hot Cheetos came to be, and not just Cheetos, but Doritos and the whole Flamin' Hot brand.
Yeah.
And that catapulted him from being, you know, the janitor to becoming one of the top executives at the company. And that is just a powerful American story that I said, dude, we got to make this movie.
Yeah.
We got to make the movie. How do you do that? It kind of reminded me of Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah.
Which I had the pleasure of working on as an executive when I was working for Sony. So this is the first movie. I've been trying to redo Pursuit of Happiness forever. And this is the first movie that I have found where I think we got close.
I do think that there's something in these stories that are very inspirational and motivational in the sense that you don't have to necessarily, like, I think that there's this misconception of, like, you have to, you know, go to the best schools and you have to go to the best things to get into the best jobs and be in front of the best companies. And it's like, he was a janitor at this place.
Yes.
He didn't even have a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. And he, like, made a seat for himself, you know? And I don't know how the story unfolds because I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. But there is so much power in that because I think that a lot of time we can feel really helpless where we are. Mm-hmm. And if you have the passion, you have the drive, and you believe in yourself, you really can get there.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, anybody watching this movie can take something away for their own life in terms of perseverance and tenacity. And also, Richard didn't set out to create a billion-dollar brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't set out to create, you know, what we now know as Flamin' Hot. That wasn't his goal. His goal was to create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Save jobs. You know, the plant workers, the people I'm working next to, they're losing their jobs. Families are suffering. I want to do something about that. That's service.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so often, you know, especially, you know, in LA, there's just this addiction to dream chasing, you know, versus like, okay, yeah, I have a dream, but how can I be of service?
Mm-hmm.
How can I help somebody?
So true.
You know, along the way, how can I do that? Because at the end of the day, most people that end up changing this world are not setting out to change the world. They're just setting out to help somebody.
Mm-hmm. So true.
And I think this movie really shows the power of that.
Yeah, it's like looking at the bigger picture outside of yourself.
Yes.
Always.
Absolutely.
Which is hard sometimes.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. But like if Richard was trying to go out there and create Flamin' Hot Cheetos and billion-dollar brand, we wouldn't be talking about him right now.
So true.
But his heart was, I want to save jobs.
Yeah.
I want to give back to the place that's given so much to me.
It's just so counterculture to what it is now.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I know.
It's so opposite of what the society is that we're living in.
I know. But that's why I think, you know, I've screened this film, you know, with audiences all around the country already. And people, I mean, of all races, ages, you know, genders, I mean, they are loving this movie. I think because they do relate to it, like because the culture is so counterculture at this mm-hmm. moment that this mm-hmm. movie is cutting through and resonating with people in a way that is really gratifying and surprising. And I'm excited to see how it does once it debuts on Hulu and Disney Plus.
I'm so excited to see it.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see it too.
June 9th, which it'll be the day after this podcast airs.
Yeah. Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
So if you're listening to this, you could probably watch it at this point.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. Yes. Stream it right now. Get a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos and watch the movie.
Honestly, that sounds ideal.
But I feel like you do that too. You know, you have so much going on. I don't even want to know what your calendar looks like in a day, like truly. But I feel like you still go and you still preach at churches and you still make time to do all that. And I think that is also a testament to who you are too, because I think you can be doing the same thing. Like, how can I build my dream and chase my dream and do this? But you also have this aspect of you that really wants to serve and give back to other people.
Amen. Yeah, no, it's important. It's important. I mean, I wouldn't be here if that wasn't the case. You know, it's really about that.
Yeah.
Going back to, you know, even the conversation about the book and not, you know, making the list, you know, okay, but you touch lives.
Yeah.
You know,
you
improve people's point of view and perspective.
Yeah, we heard from so many mothers and daughters that were doing the devotional together, which was really, really, really
Come
cool
on.
And special, which is why we did it. You know, it was like,
And it's just, you know, it's like at the end of the movie, Richard has a line about not letting anyone, you know, steal his story, you know, and taking ownership of it. Mm-hmm. And I resonate with that. Like, you know, let's not let these arbitrary things like a list steal our story.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a great story. We've got a book made.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Like, you're an author. You're eternal.
Yeah.
When I first became an author, my buddy was like, who was an author? He said, now you're eternal. He's like, your words will be around forever.
That's cool. I never thought of it like that.
Really cool perspective.
Yes. That is a really cool perspective.
Wow. Yes.
What actually, you know, because you do have so many things going on, what do you want your story to be? Like, where does Devon go from here?
Yeah, you know, man, what Captain Kirk said, boldly go where no man has gone before. So, you know, I'm trying to just live in the fullness of my gifts you know, I love entertainment. So, you know, continuing to act and produce and write books and maybe direct one day and continue to preach and, you know, just continue to be me and do all that I'm gifted to do and keep challenging myself, you know, take it to the next level, see what can happen. With still the same goal of, you know, uplifting people along the way and providing information, inspiration, hope and help. Those are things that no matter what I do, I'm passionate about those things. But what it's all going to look like, I truly have no idea.
Do you take time for yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
For sure. Have to take time.
I mean, I feel like you're what's the Energizer Bunny? You just keep going.
No, I do. But I do because I have a very, you know, strong regimen. You know, I work out in the mornings. I have supplements and things that I take. I take off the Sabbath. So Friday night sundown to Saturday night sundown, I don't work. Turn off my email. Don't check social media. You know, so I do have a lot of, you know, things in place to help me stay where I need to stay mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Yeah, I think that I was going to ask that too. Like, what do you do to give back when you're giving so much to people? So
yeah.
I think sometimes our society and structure is like you grind and don't take any time for yourself. So
you have to.
Yeah.
You have to. I mean, I don't even like that concept of grinding. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
You know, like if you grind your teeth, it's a problem.
Yeah,
you know,
right? You're whittling like, them down.
Yes, yeah. You're whittling them down.
Yeah.
You know?
Like you go to different countries and they have like scheduled nap times
yes.
in the middle of them. Like, we're
yes.
not doing it right over here.
So true. So, no, I definitely, you know, I'm busy and I have seasons, you know, like this when I'm out promoting the film, which are busier than usual. But, you know, I still try to find the time to, you know, and also even through all the staying in therapy, staying mm-hmm. in life coaching, you know, still taking time to journal and read and pray. All those things are essential no mm-hmm. matter how busy I get.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're easy to not put in the schedule.
They're easy. It's easy.
Yeah.
But like, no, I'm like, no. I'm going to find an hour for my therapy session. I'm going to find an hour for my life coaching. Like, we'll figure it out. But those are the things that help.
Yeah.
Because having an outlet to express and explore what's going on inside of me consistently, I've learned that that's really helpful to manage all that's that I'm tasked with doing.
Yeah, I think when you find the importance in those things like therapy and stuff, you're like, I will make time where I need to make time because it makes the biggest difference of
it does
how I'm able to give to other people.
Do you work out 7 days a week?
The important question.
Well,
6 days a week.
It just depends. I mean, you know, today I didn't. I've worked out this morning. I'll probably work out tonight. But I try to do some movement every day as best I can. You know, so I will go between like rumble boxing and hot yoga and this studio climber class here in LA.
Oh, you know, the one with like the things.
I'll do that. Then I'll like sometimes jump rope at the house or work out with this axe that's called like Chop Fit, which, you know, is pretty cool.
Whoa.
So, you know, the TikToker that's always like chopping.
Yeah. So I just mix it up, you know, but I try to do some movement
every day.
Cause it just, first of all, just helps me mentally.
Yeah.
Like if I usually don't work out in the morning, I feel a little groggy.
Yeah.
But even if I just do 15 minutes of jump rope, I'm like, okay, my blood's flowing.
That's a long time to jump rope. Let me tell you, I can barely do 3 minutes of jump rope. I'm like,
yeah, I got a playlist and I set the clock to 15 minutes and, you know, just go after it. Yeah.
Man, you really are always inspiring me, motivating me.
That's a blessing.
You are somebody that I really, really look up to and admire in many ways. So just always rooting for you and all your projects. I hope Flamin' Hot goes to number one and
streams. On both streaming services.
Yeah, just all over the place. Ooh. And that you make another, I don't even, whatever you wanted. I hope everything that you do turns out successful because I believe in what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I believe in what both of you all are doing. Grateful always for the time to be able to talk and, you know, connect.
Yeah, thank you for coming and scrubbing in in studio.
In studio, and please, when One of One comes out, please come back because we could do a
whole series on that one.
Whole series on that one.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Hey, you know how we're always trying to keep our girls' nights exciting with new cocktails?
Yeah.
Well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
21 Seeds infused tequila.
Wait, you already know?
Of course. 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila infused with juice from real fruit.
Yeah, so you only need two or three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
But did you know that 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend?
Sounds like there's a good story behind that for sure. So listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth: no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps get them through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule.
It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you.
Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.